The Tom Woods Show, episode 1319, bonus episode.
Prepare to set fire to the index card of allowable opinion. Your daily dose of liberty education starts here. The Tom Woods Show.
Hey everybody, Tom Woods here, talking to my friend Steve Clayton today. This guy had the life. He had everything just the way you'd think you'd want it. He was a VP at LabCorp, which of course many of us have visited to get blood drawn and have testing done. And then he decided that it was not fulfilling and it was not what he wanted to do. And he was still in the rat race and it wasn't worth it. And so he took a gamble and decided to drop out of that and become an entrepreneur. So that is some serious risk taking. And it really, really paid off for him. And he now has many years of experience with not just e-commerce, but a lot of different online business models. He's had a lot of success with them. And here we are in January 2019. I thought it was a good opportunity to talk to him about what works, what doesn't, what kinds of factors you want to look for in the kind of business you should start. And it so happens that a number of the factors that Steve and I have talked about happen to be ones that are present in some of the things I do. But that's just because I fell, you know what, backwards into it. I didn't realize I was doing the right thing. I was just groping around and I happened upon a combination of factors that worked really well. So I want to talk to him about what works, what doesn't work, what factors tend to lead to success, what things tend to hold people back. Because this sounds like I'm describing my life here because I was held back for a long time too. So anyway, lots to talk about with Steve. Steve, welcome back.
Well, thanks, Tom.
Time for our annual talk about online business stuff. I've just in the past couple of months, I've actually got some really nice emails from people I did not even know were doing anything or having any success. So I heard from a guy I knew years and years ago named Mick McKay, and it turns out he's pulling in $3,000 a month just over the past year or so. He just started following my email list and doing what I recommended, and doggone it, it works. Or another guy, he didn't join any of your training programs, but he just went to a webinar you guys did, and it just gave, the webinar alone gave him enough ideas to start selling some of his own stuff on Amazon. Right. And so, you know, last month he did $2,000 worth of sales. I mean, not, you know, he's not going to take a vacation in Hawaii on that, but considering he just got started, he's absolutely thrilled. I had another guy send me a Christmas gift at my P.O. box because he'd been making $8,000 a month because of the training that you guys had been doing. And this has just started to snowball. Most of the time, I never even, people don't bother to tell me how they're doing.
I know.
And lately, now they're actually, because I've been badgering them, look, if you're doing well, you know, the old man here would like to know about it. Anyway, I thought this is an opportune moment. It is January. Yeah. People, I hope, are still in New Year's resolution mode. So I'd like to start off, first of all, with, frankly, why you're the ideal guest for this, because your background is very interesting. The risks you took, leaving a very, very comfortable position, kind of position some people would have killed for, yeah, in order to go out into the unknown. You really are the model for everybody.
Well, yeah, okay.
I mean, sorry, am I overstating it?
Well, I don't know. Puts a lot of, no pressure. I mean, in many ways, I agree. You know, I mean, I have kind of a different, I'm a serial entrepreneur now. I can say that now after, you know, I've been doing it now for, you know, more than a decade. But, you know, I found myself kind of in my late 30s. Unfortunately, I'm that old now. I found myself in my late 30s and I've sort of achieved my corporate goals. You know, I had a really good gig. I was a chief information officer for a public company. And then I became a VP for a Fortune 500 company. And, you know, I was making really good money and stock options and bonuses. But I was spending a lot too. That's, you know, you get to the point where you have a huge burn rate. You know, I had two young kids, 8 years old, 10 years old, a wife that didn't work. So, you know, I mean, it was comfortable, but I definitely knew that something was missing and I just wasn't happy. I really didn't have the freedom that I wanted, you know, and by that, I mean, I had financial freedom, certainly, but you know, when you have a job like that, boy, you don't have any time freedom at all. I mean, I was working 7 days a week, essentially, and you don't have any geographic freedom. You know, you have to live pretty much where they tell you to. So I always wanted to be an entrepreneur. I was a frustrated entrepreneur. And I just found myself achieving most of what I had set out to do in corporate and then saying, well, and again, at 38, 39, whatever I was, is this it? You know, and I just made the leap. I said, I'm going to give this a try. This is my time. I'm going to do it to see if I can make it work. And I like to say I haven't had to have a real job since. So it's been fantastic.
That's a great thing. That's a great thing. And I started off pretty, I wouldn't just say non-entrepreneurial, almost anti-entrepreneurial. I was a college professor.
Oh, yeah. So,
and I had tenure.
Oh, God.
So there you go, right? You don't have to do anything.
you never leave.
Right, yeah. Right, right. So the fact that I did leave that, you know, does say something. And it was a little bit, you know, touch and go for a while. So I've known you at this point for 2-3 years, and I've been following your progress, and I've been interested in the different kind of business models that you've pursued. But I don't really know all the details. Can you maybe paint a picture of what do your businesses look like? What exactly do you do?
Yeah, we just, it's funny, you know, you wake up one day and you realize you've gone from zero to something quite large, really. At this point, we have employees in the United States, in the UK, in Pakistan, in China, in Australia, in Ireland, in Argentina, in Croatia, and in Romania. We've got, across all our companies, we've got more than 50 folks who work for us. And we haven't closed all the books for 2018, but we will do somewhere between $17 to $20 million in revenue. Now, again, this is across all of our different companies. So we've got an affiliate marketing company that's turned into like a training, consulting, and of course, affiliate marketing. We've got a big e-com company with a China warehouse and China office. We've got a software as a service company, which we create software that helps people sell products on Amazon. There's a whole bunch of back office stuff that has to get done. We own a hosting company. We have another software as a service company that essentially does digital marketing for small local business owners. We've got ownership in a search engine marketing agency for small local business owners. And we're starting up a new company in 2019 that we'll be talking to people about. So it's pretty, you don't even really think about it because you're just going from one thing to the next as kind of a serial entrepreneur. But you know, you wake up one day and you start to put it down on paper and you go, wow, that's there's a lot going on, you know? So
yeah, that makes me sound like a lazy bum compared to what it is you're doing. I want to point something out. Sometimes, because you do a lot of training of people, you have training programs and you know, groups where you help folks and stuff. And whenever people who are successful do that, you always hear people on the sidelines saying, well, if you were so successful, you wouldn't need to be teaching people. You just go do it. But, you know, look, let me tell you something that I'm actually very successful at, Steve, and that is I'm really successful at email marketing. Okay. I've gotten really, really good at this and I love doing it. And so this year I've actually decided I'm actually going to put together a little program where I teach it to people and I should show you this is what works. I've been doing it for a long time. I know what works, what doesn't. I'm going to show people exactly how to build a list, what to send to that list, what everybody else is doing wrong, and you can save yourself some trouble by not doing it. And now I expect that program to do pretty well. Like I think I'll probably sell a decent number of them, but it's not going to be like my main source of income. And I could easily not do it, and it would save me some aggravation not to do it. But I want to do it because I think that would be enjoyable and rewarding.
Yeah.
And so if people say, well, if you were such a good email marketer, just keep doing that. Why do you need to sell a program on it? Because it's fun. You know, stop being a killjoy because it's fun.
It's actually more fun. I mean, for us, long time ago, we realized that our passion was really to teach and to train. And, you know, as you were pointing out in the beginning, when we first started talking, where you get these people that just come up to you and say, hey, you know, I've done well because of your influence. Let me tell you, that never gets old. And so a long time ago, we decided that was what we wanted to do. And so our model is very simple. Every single thing that we do, as far as starting businesses and running them, every single thing we do that works, right? Because we do shit that doesn't work. Sorry. But everything that we do that works, we teach also. Because why not? You know, I mean, it's synergistic. And so, you know, since we've starting all these businesses, we've created 15 online training products that cover, you know, SEO, SEM, affiliate marketing, information product development, e-commerce, and tens of thousands of people we've impacted positively, I certainly hope. But and we get those kinds of emails and people coming up to me in all sorts of weird places. And and saying, hey, you know, even the first one we did was Commission Blueprint, which is now more than a decade old. People come up to me and say, hey, it changed my life, you know, and that just does not get old. And there is no reason we ever will stop doing that, because it's, frankly, it's more fun than the core of our business, because we have an impact on individual people's lives. It's hard to replace that.
You know, people listen to what you're saying, and a lot of them are inspired, and they do take that first step. They start a business, particularly an online one. But there are a lot of folks who, in principle, they want to do it.
Yeah.
But in practice, that first step is just the biggest hurdle of all. And in my case, it wasn't so much, I mean, for a lot of people, it's fear of failure.
Yep.
In my case, it wasn't so much fear of failure, although there was some of that. It was more, I'm not even sure I can put it into words. It was more like a fear of just breaking from routine, because I liked my routine. That was something that I liked, stability. I liked something I could rely on. And breaking from that, I guess for my personality type, was a real challenge. So obviously you must run into a lot of people who, you know, come to your stuff and they love what you're doing and then they never pull the trigger. And I'm sure you ask them why.
Yeah. Oh yeah. We spend a lot of time on these things. I mean, as I said, we've seen tens of thousands of people try to, you know, go down this path of making this dream a reality. And we've seen some, absolutely some common reasons why people just don't start. And you talked about one, I mean, fear is a big one. And you articulated very well some of the fears that people have: fear of failure, fear of success, fear of getting out of their routine, doing something different. But I'll tell you what, I actually think that there's a more insidious fear that people have that we don't talk about because people don't realize it. And it's because for many people who want to go down this path, the dream of being an entrepreneur is part of their personality. It's part of their makeup and their identity of themselves. And they always have this dream, you know, well, at any moment I could leave corporate or I could leave my job at McDonald's or whatever it is and become an entrepreneur. And I always have that. And it's a part of my identity. So there's a fear, if I actually took the step to do it, but then failed, then it's a devastating, devastating loss. Because not only is it, did I fail, I have lost that part of my identity. And I've come to believe over more than a decade of doing this, that's a bigger fear that people have than anything else. And what people need to understand is that they need to embrace, I mean, it's an old cliche, they need to embrace failure, because it's an absolute requirement on the path of becoming an entrepreneur. Tom, I'm sure you've had some failures along the way too, right? I mean, how could you not? And so people need to just say, it's like a task I have to check off. I've got to do some failure, you know, along with some success. So anyway, I'm pretty passionate about that one. That's one we see all the time. We see people get confused, sort of like this paralysis by analysis. There's so many different things nowadays that people could do from a business perspective. Used to be, you know, well, you could open up this kind of store or that kind of store or whatever. You could be an Avon salesperson, whatever it is. Now, there are so many different things that people just get paralyzed, you know? And so you have to have some kind of criteria to sort of say, yeah, this is the right business model for me. I'm going to do that one. And I think money and time, you know, those are a couple, people think you need a lot of money to start. And truth is, you know, 20 years ago, you did. You know, anytime you're going to do any kind of brick and mortar or anything like that, you absolutely needed a lot of capital. And you just don't now. It's always easier, you know, with money and capital, but there's lots of different ways to start businesses without upfront capital. And with just a little bit of time, you know, just putting in as much time as you can. Obviously, the more time you put in, the faster you'll achieve results. But if you could only put in an hour every couple of days, maybe it takes you a year to make results instead of 2 months. But at least at the end of that year, you're where you want to be, you know? So those are some of the things that I've come across, the, you know, the reasons that people don't even begin.
You know, on the failure front, I'll say that, I mean, I've done pretty well with digital products and stuff that have really done well, but I'm also an author, right. And let's just say some of my books have done better than others. We'll just leave it there. And the thing with that is that's a very public failure.
Yeah.
Because people can easily track in this day and age how your book is doing, you know? So, that, right. I mean, now, the last book I put out was several years ago, and it was just a compilation of essays that I self-published. And that thing did way, way better than I thought, considering it took no time to put together. But, yeah, there have been times when I don't understand why. I mean, this should have worked. I know I have experience in this. And then other times, boy, did it work. So, yeah, that's just part and parcel of it. And you just have to reconcile yourself to the fact that you're not going to be the exception to the universal rule. Okay. And just
never,
just be prepared for that. And it's going to, it will make you tougher and stronger. And it is going to give you qualities you're going to need in order to succeed in the long run. All right. So let's say we get past all these barriers.
Yeah.
A lot of them really are self-imposed barriers. They really are a mindset problem.
Yep.
Let's say we get past those. But even that, obviously, that's just step one, because then step two is you have to have a business that works and that isn't losing money for you.
Yep.
So then there are, I mean, I remember when I did a workshop for people and I said, I had a lot of people who had tried to start some kind of online business. And I asked them, what was the main thing that caused it to fail? And overwhelmingly, they said, I couldn't get traffic to it.
Right.
I could not get people to show up. So what do you find is the main thing or the main few things or whatever?
Yeah, there's always, particular tactics and stuff that cause people problems. And oftentimes traffic is certainly one of them. But at a higher level, I think when we sit down and look at, why do people have problems once they've gotten over the hump to start? The first thing we see is that people, they don't manage their own expectations properly. And by that, I mean, they don't have like a benchmark. So if you could peek under the covers and reverse engineer a successful business and you could see, oh, okay, well, for the first 3 months, it was really slow. And then month four, it was better. Month five, it dipped a little bit. Then month seven, eight took off like gangbusters. If you had access to that data, to that benchmark data, and really understood it, then you wouldn't be upset if months one through three were slow, But people don't go to the trouble of, either partnering in some way with somebody or getting training, or there's other ways to reverse engineer benchmarks, even just some, sleuthing online, you can do that. But part of putting together a business is not just, oh, I'm going to just do it and then it's immediately going to be successful and life will be great on, day three. It's actually planning out, okay, well, when should I begin to worry? And if you don't plan that out, you typically find yourself worrying unreasonably or potentially quitting before success is going to happen. So I think that's the biggest thing that we see. Another thing that we see is that people just kind of lose faith along the way. Even if they have a benchmark, they don't keep that faith in themselves or, in the business model or whatever. And, what we find is really super helpful is if you can go to a business that's already doing it and you could see that other people are successful doing that model, because it's pretty rare that you're going to come up with some business model that nobody's ever done before, right? It's just not, that's a Facebook, that's a Google. I mean, those are, once every 20, 30 years, it's probably not going to be you. So the plus side of that is you have access to benchmarks and to other businesses, and you could see, and you should be saying to yourself anyway, look, if these people can do this, I mean, why can't I? And you're absolutely correct if you can get your arms around that. So I think people lose faith in themselves. And I think the other thing is that, and it's also a little bit of a speed thing, it's cash flow. There are some businesses that lend themselves more to easier cash flow management. Let me give you one that's not so great. So we love call it private label or white label, whatever it is. We manufacture our own goods, right? So we have factories in China. We manufacture goods. These are our own brands, our own products. We import them into the United States and we sell them online. We sell them on Amazon. We sell them on our own websites. It's a very, very big business for us. And it's great for a ton of reasons. But one of the reasons why it's not great is cash flow. The traditional retail model where you're buying all this inventory and, like let's take Christmas. I mean, we spend, we might spend $1 million in July on inventory, and that's going to take 90 days to make its way here to the United States by sea, maybe a little bit more because we have to get manufactured. And then it's going to take another, 30, 60 days during the Christmas season to sell it. I mean, that's a long time, right? Now on paper, you're making really good profits. And so your P&L, your accounting statements, they look great. But you look at your bank balance and you go, I can't take any money out. I can't take a salary out. And so people get very confused by that and they tend to give up. And again, it goes back to They just need to understand the pros and cons of the business model and plan it out and say, okay, for a business like that, I'm going to have to go through a whole year cycle probably, and including a holiday season before I can really, you know, legitimately start to take money out. But people get disillusioned and then they think, well, okay, great. It's wonderful that I built a business, but if I can't take any cash out, then what good is it to me? You know? And so they need to have that understanding. So I think those are the three reasons that we see, you know, at like sort of a higher level, why people tend to give up.
All right. Now let me ask a question that may wind up just being a dead end, because maybe it's just the flip side of everything you just said. But if you wanted to say, all right, I've looked over the years, first at my own businesses and secondly at those of other people.
Yeah.
What are the commonalities you see, like in terms of people being successful, things that they do that you see consistently that from people being successful? And I don't mean like Benjamin Franklin Almanac, things like wake up early in the morning, but more, guts of things.
Yep. No, absolutely. I mean, there are absolutely commonalities, right? So just a few of them. And some of these, some things that we see might seem like common sense, and it is. However, you'd be surprised at how often people don't employ that common sense. Or maybe you wouldn't be surprised, but many others would be. So the first thing is a high quality product or service. And again, you'd think, well, that's ridiculous. Why am I even bothering to listen to Steve say that? You know, but you'd be shocked at how many people I've talked to over the years who manufacture goods in China, as an example, and they just go, it's good enough. And then they go through all this trouble. Maybe they don't even do quality control in China. And the product gets to Amazon and they sell it and somebody gets pissed off because it's really, you know, they had a problem with it. You get a 1-star review. Well, your business is done. All because you didn't take that extra, week or whatever. I mean, whatever it is, right? That extra incremental time, energy to make sure that you had a high quality or service. It's easy to half-ass it and you're never going to get away with it in the long term. Never. So high quality or product or service, the market demand, you know, you talked about traffic, market demand and access to the market. Now, again, might seem like a no-brainer. Well, yeah, of course. Okay. We're going to pick a product or service that has a big demand and we can have access to the market. But again, you'd be amazed at people who fall in love with trying to sell something, that they just love the idea of this product or service. And they think, it's so good, I can overcome the fact that there's not a big enough market for it, or the fact that I can't find a traffic source for it. I'm here to tell you, you can't.
Yeah.
It's the one thing that you most of the time can never fix. You know, if there isn't a demand for the product and or you can't target those people in some way, either through Facebook advertising or for you're on Amazon or emails or whatever it is, you're never, ever going to fix that problem.
And Steve, if I may just jump in for a second, I can't say who it is, of course. I don't want to hurt the guy's feelings, but I know of somebody who is desperately trying to sell something nobody wants. And he tries it in every which way. And he on Facebook, he gets zero engagement.
Right.
And he just keeps trying to. And I've told him exactly what the problem is, because none of his friends want to tell him. It's the same way that your friends don't tell you that you're a terrible singer. And then you go on American Idol and you're humiliated in front of everybody.
Yep.
The fundamental thing that you cannot get over is if nobody wants what you have, it can't fly. It can't. Your passion alone. Now, passion's important because it'll keep you going. But it can't just be passion, because what the market economy is all about is not just passion, but passion for providing something people want and need at a price they can afford.
Exactly.
And he's not ticking off any of those boxes.
Nope. And it's amazing how many people make that mistake, even though everyone would say, well, that's a no-brainer. Why am I even bothering to think about that? But it's amazing how many people make that mistake.
Oh, they absolutely do miss it. In fact, my email, one of the emails I sent to my list this month couldn't have been more than 30 words entirely. And the subject line was business school degree in 2 sentences. Sentence one is, find something people want. Sentence number two, give it to them. I mean, now I get that that's very simple, but honestly, we sometimes get so caught up in something that we love. Well, then people darn well should want this thing. But Marketing 101 says you're not there to lecture people about what they want. You're to find out what they want and deliver it to them.
Exactly. I mean, absolutely. I mean, there are, you know, exceptions. You know, you think about like somebody like Steve Jobs who could do that. But you know what? Guess how many of us are Steve Jobs? Absolutely none of us. So you're just not going to be able to make that happen. So that's a big one. You know, the other thing we see is, here's an example of maybe of what not to do. Think, are you familiar with these Pandora bracelets, Tom?
Oh, no, I'm not.
Okay. So these were pretty big for like moms and, you know, to get your mom or to get your wife or something. They're these charm bracelets, and you can add on like meaningful charms, like maybe they're into soccer or tennis or whatever. Okay. I don't know. You know. So anyway, they've been a big thing. And then the whole idea is you add on to them, you know, over time. So it's kind of a neat idea. But the problem is that it was sort of a fad, you know, and it's kind of like a pop culture thing. And so Pandora now finds itself being a one-trick pony. And they actually have built out, like, right, I'm in Chicago, and right on Michigan Avenue, which is, you know, prime real estate, it's like Fifth Avenue in Chicago, there is a Pandora store, right? And they only have this like one thing, and they have been unable to expand their product line because people just don't see them as anything but this one trick pony. So it's kind of, you know, what I'm trying to get at is that one of the things that we see that's common with people that are successful is they don't chase the fads. They don't chase the pop culture. You know, how much longer are Pandora bracelets going to be around? I don't know, but probably not that much longer. How long will mousetraps be around? A long freaking time, you know, and they've been around for a long time. So, you know, it might not be sexy, but it's not a fad. It's not a pop culture. And it kind of is a corollary to what you were talking about with, you know, the marketing rule. But it's definitely something that we see that's very common. Is almost the more boring the product or service, the more successful people tend to be.
Right. Now, the thing is, one objection I can imagine somebody having to that would be, yeah. I get your point about the mousetraps, but probably, I don't know anything about the mousetrap market, but probably the thing with mousetraps would be there are hugely established mousetrap companies already out there. So I mean, there's a lot of factors to bear in mind. So how do you, in light of all this kind of stuff, thinking about reasons people fail, ways they succeed, things that work, things that don't, at this point, after having done this for, you know, basically teaching people stuff and things like that for about 10 years, what are you settling on where you say, well, you know, nothing's going to solve every conceivable problem, but this comes darn close?
Yeah. I mean, I think you have to look at a whole bunch of metrics when you're evaluating a business model, right? And I think you have to look at solving all these problems that we've been talking about and basically just measuring and planning out, okay, if I were to do this business model, is it going to work for me? Is it going to overcome these obstacles that we have here, right? So a few things to think about, like things to really just sort of check off, you know? When you're looking at a business model, take a look and see, all right, number one, is it going to give me results in a short period of time? You know, is it going to give me results in weeks and not months, maybe even days, right? Is it going to do that? Is there a high profit potential in year one, right? Because again, we want to get over some of these problems and issues and where people give up too soon and so on. Also, is there a high profit potential, a growing and a higher profit potential in year three? You know, if you really look at that, because then it's going to answer the question, okay, well, it's great for year one, it's got longevity, and it can scale. Okay. Look at the margins. So, you know, retail has pretty low margins. I mean, you know, our e-com business, we love it to death. It's wonderful. But one of the things I hate about it, in addition to cash flow, is the margins are much lower than some of our other business models. You know, I mean, if we can get to 15% net profit, we're very, very happy campers, you know, and that's pretty typical for retail, but it's not, you know, it's not ideal. You'd love to have a business that had a higher margin. Now, again, keep in mind when you're sort of putting together like a matrix and you're putting these things down in a spreadsheet and you're going to check them off and you're going to evaluate them and so on, you don't have to be perfect on all of them. It's not like I'm suggesting that you should never start a retail business or an online retail business or anything like that. But you want to be positive in way more of them than negative in way more of them, you know? So high margins, definitely a big issue. Low fixed costs. You know, you don't want to get into a business where you've got to sink a lot of money up front for a bunch of reasons. I mean, you know, risk is a big one, but also who wants to have capital to start up a business? I mean, it'd be much better if you could do it without having that. I think predictable and repeatable success. This is really, really important. You know, Tom, one of the studies, and admittedly, statistics are, you know, better than I. You can make all sorts of arguments either way. But if you look at franchises as an example, some 90% or more of franchises are successful versus somewhere around 15% of businesses that are non-franchises are successful. Now, of course, it depends on what you define as success and blah, blah, blah. But there's truth in those numbers somewhere, right? And the reason is because it's about some of the things that I talked about before. You know, there are benchmarks. There's someone to train you. You have access to be able to reverse engineer a business. You can see the exact model being successful elsewhere. So it's critical as you're evaluating business models to make sure that you can find your way through to predictable and repeatable success. You know, you want to stack as much as you can in your favor, right? We talked about cash flow. That's absolutely critical. You want to make sure that, you know, anything you're looking to do, you can have some expectation of taking some cash out. Otherwise, you're going to get frustrated. I don't care how much you manage your own expectations. If you're running a successful business, if you're working really hard at it, if you get passionate about it and you're spending your time on it and you can't take cash out, you're going to get pissed off. I mean, it's just going to happen. You know, look at the customer count that's required. And by that, I mean, so if you've got a business where you need one customer that can bring in $1 billion versus a billion customers that, you know, bring in a dollar each, you know, which one's easier to manage? Obviously, there are pros and cons, because if you lose that one customer, you know, who's bringing in $1 billion, you get problems. But in general, you know, the smaller universe and population of the customer base that you need in order to be successful, the better off you're going to be, because it's easier to manage, you know, those customers. It's easier to get them, because it's always problematic to get new customers and retain them. So look at that. Look at having a low customer count required. I think that having stuff be outsourced or be able to be outsourced, you know, so in other words, always be planning to put yourself out of a job. I think that this is a model that we've really started to follow over the last 5 or 6 years. All of the businesses that I mentioned that we run have their own CEOs and all this kind of stuff. And, you know, we discovered something that I think, you know, many people already know, which is entrepreneurs don't really make the best CEOs. You know, we're really good at starting businesses. We've got great ideas. We've got great drive in the beginning, but we're not so great at running businesses. You know, it's just not like necessarily our forte. So make sure that when you're looking at a business model, that it's not something that you can't get yourself out of, you know? We talked about the huge demand and access to market. I mean, that is critical. We beat that to death. And I think the last thing I'll say is something that a lot of people overlook. It is so much better if your business model includes recurring customers. So we've got two big brands that drive our e-com company. One of them is mostly one-off purchases. It just doesn't lend itself to ongoing purchases. But the other one is ongoing. There's some consumables there. Like think like vitamins or pet supplements or doggy bags, you know, that you need for cleaning up after your pet. These are things that people use and need to have replenished. So once you go to the trouble and cost and effort to actually get a customer, you can then sell them on an ongoing basis. You know, so they're worth, the lifetime value of that customer is worth so much more. A lot of people don't think about that when they're starting a business. And I'll tell you this, the effort to start a business without recurring customers is repeat customers is exactly the same as with. And it is so much easier to be successful if you can have a business that has repeat customers.
Yeah, because it's just a general principle that it's harder to acquire a new customer than it is to get the original one to buy something else, yep. Especially if it's in a recurring situation. I mean, that it sounds like, in a way, you're talking about my business model as just this one guy who runs his own little operation here, because I've got recurring payments,
right,
because of the nature of the services I have. And then also your point about I don't necessarily – I mean, it's up to each person, I suppose, but – I'm with Ben Settle, who says, I'd rather have 4 quarters than 100 pennies.
Right.
And so when you're talking about the number of customers, I'd rather have a small number of really committed people who are making a real commitment than have to deal with a sprawling empire of 8 billion people each donating a penny. I can't handle it. I don't want to handle it if I don't have to, if I get the same result the other way. So,
absolutely.
All right. So if those are the factors then, well, as always with when I talk to you, Steve, I always want to give people an opportunity to hear more and to actually see you lay out exactly what you're talking about and what really does work, what works best in 2019. Yep. But really, I couldn't agree more. You got to have the recurring aspect because you have much, much better chance of success because you're not trying to, with every new sale, you're trying to reinvent the wheel unless you have a recurring aspect to it. So Steve is going to talk to you about what a business like that looks like and how, you know, even a schmuck like me can run it. And remember, I was anti-entrepreneurial. I was a college professor with tenure. It doesn't get worse than that, okay? It doesn't get worse than that. And yet I'd somehow managed to do this. So Steve is going to walk you through what he recommends these days. And if that was your New Year's resolution, to quit being badgered by Woods and actually get off your rear end and do something, now is the time. So Steve is going to actually run a little workshop for us. Sign up for it, tomwoods.com/Steve. It's going to be January 29th, 2019 at 7 p.m. Eastern Time. tomwoods.com/Steve is the sign-up link. And I'm throwing in a little bonus, not so much for you folks, but for a mutual friend of ours, Steve. I didn't forgot to tell you about this, but I'm just doing it. I have a friend of the show who's been a guest many times, everybody loves, named Scott Horton, and he has a show of his own, and he is on a shoestring budget, and he performs miracles on a shoestring budget, and doggone it, it's unjust that he's on a shoestring budget. So everybody who shows up to your seminar, Steve, and stays through the whole presentation, for each person who does that, I'll donate $10 to the Scott Horton Show. So I want to be giving Scott thousands of well-earned dollars as a result of you folks doing something you should do anyway, which is listen to Steve Clayton.
Right.
That's never a bad use of your time. Steve, before I let you go, I just want to ask you, as a guy who's been through it all, and I mean, I've never been in the corporate world. You have.
Yeah.
And then to leave that and do all this, obviously – I can't let you go without asking about lessons learned. I mean, obviously you've had failures or whatever, but what would you say are things that you learned from all this?
You know, I actually learned when I was making the decision about leaving corporate, I got the best advice from my dad. Now, to put it in perspective, you know, my dad was also the anti-entrepreneur for sure. Now, he's a guy that spent 35 years with the same company, public sector. Mechanical engineer by education, and retired at 55 with a full pension and, you know, blah, 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 company guy. I don't think he was terribly happy, you know, doing what he was doing. He spent, you know, probably 3.5 hours on the bus every day commuting into Manhattan.
Oh.
I mean, you know, he had us in the suburbs so we could have, you know, schools and wide open spaces. And the poor guy spent that much time because of all the traffic. We were only 30 minutes away from Manhattan, but, you know, because of the traffic, rush hour. Anyway, so I remember having this conversation with my dad. I was right on the cusp. I was like, okay, am I going to do it? Am I not going to do it? And I said, Dad, you know, I make a lot of money. I'm well taken care of, but I have a huge burn rate. I've got young kids. I've got a wife that doesn't work. I've got a mortgage. I've got all this kind of stuff. But I really, really want to do this, but I'm worried about giving up the security. And my dad said, listen, you really need to think about what security is. You know, he didn't say something as cliche as, well, are you happy? You know, go be happy. He didn't say that. He said, what is security? And he said, you know, do you feel more secure leaving your fate sort of up to a boardroom of people that maybe don't know you, maybe are making decisions based on a spreadsheet, maybe are making decisions based on the economy or how much you make versus someone else or whatever it is, you know, some decision factors that you're not a part of, you have no influence on, and you're just not in the room, you know? Is that security? Or is security counting on yourself and knowing everything that's going on, building something that you know all the aspects of, and you will, you know, you'll succeed on your own merits, and absolutely everything you do you'll be in the room for, and it'll be all about you and your family. And I thought, you know, and that was the moment where I was like, you know what? I'm done. I'm not going to doubt this anymore. I'm just going to do it. And that was a really important lesson that I've kept with me. And I was really surprised to hear that from my father, honestly. I expected to hear one of two things from him. Either some cliche like, well, are you happy? Follow your dream, follow your heart, right? Or I expected him to say, you knucklehead, you've got a great thing going. You've got a family to support. Stop worrying about if you're happy every second in your life. You know, that's kind of what I expected to hear from him, but I didn't. I got this, you know, really sage and you know, wonderful advice about what security really is. And it meant the world to me, and it made me very comfortable with my decision to just say, I'm going to go do it.
Well, that's a great one. That's a darn good story. All right. Well, look, maybe this is the thing that'll help people do what you did. But either way, the curiosity's got to be killing you guys at this point. You should listen to Steve. And I, of course, I'll be there too. TomWoods.com/Steve is where you should sign up for our special event together. I've had many, you know, a lot of my people, Steve, by, yeah, you know, on a first name basis, because they swear by you. I mean, they would absolutely go to the barricades for you because of how you've helped them. So I want people to see what you have to say. TomWoods.com/Steve. Everybody who's there live for that event on January 29th, but sign up for it right away. At the end, I'll look at the numbers and we'll multiply that by 10 and send that amount of dollars to our good friend Scott Horton. So Scott doesn't know this yet. So don't tell him. I want it to be a surprise. I just want him to get a big fat check in the mail. Don't tell him. But anyway, thanks a lot, Steve. We'll talk to you again soon.
Thanks, Tom.
All right, folks, that's it. We want to help out both you and the Scott Horton Show. So by all means, sign up at TomWoods.com/Steve. Make sure you're there live and you stay through to the end. And I want to give Scott Horton a huge fat check when this is all over, because man, does that hardworking guy deserve it. And you will definitely feel like this was a valuable use of your time, I guarantee. So TomWoods.com/Steve, and I'll see you next week.
Become a smarter libertarian in just 30 minutes a day. Visit TomWoods.com to subscribe to the show for free, and we'll see you next time.